It's a Friday, and if you have been with us on this journey, you know we love to change up things as you glide into the weekend. In our Meet the CEO series, we bring you Abdulrahman Niyoninzeye, founder of SmartClass Rwanda. At SmartClass, the vision is to bring the opportunity to attain excellent education anytime, anywhere, and also ease access to learning materials and collaboration among students of the same class. Abdulrahman, on this episode, talks edutech and so much more. From over 1,400 cities and 140 countries, we bring you the Good Morning Africa podcast. Good morning, Africa, and welcome aboard your pulse on everything business in Africa. I am Ritha Dong. For more, follow us on Twitter at the K Financial News, and you can find me at Ritha Dong. Who is Abdulrahman Niyoninzeye?
Well, thank you so much. My name is Abdul Niyoninzeye. I was born and raised from Rwanda, Kigali. Nyamirambo is my hometown. I'm a one-time dropout from university. This time I was taking biomedical technology. I'm in my last year taking international business. I'm just an ordinary man who happens to fall in love with a problem and decided and committed to solve it. So yeah, I'm a founder and the CEO of a startup called SmartClass. It's a net tech company.
Talk to us about SmartClass. What was the inspiration behind setting it up?
Well, I went to an ordinary school in my old level. This is senior 1 to senior 3. This was not a recognized school in terms of high performance during the national examinations. I started there like 3 years. And then when the national examination results came, I realized and my parents realized that I did pass, but in the nearby fail. So, and actually it was below of what my family was expecting from me. And even myself, I thought I could perform better, because if you look at the school reports, I was doing much better than that. But one thing they've learned is that the school that I went to wasn't that competent. So they found me a better school for my advanced level. This is senior 4 to senior 6. And when I arrived at this school, the environment was really, really competent. And student from this school was really, really hardworking. I would say even their confidence level was somehow high than the school that I was coming from. I worked so hard, and when the results of the first term came through, I was fine, I guess, the 7th of the class, I guess. And this built my confidence back, and I realized that I'm the same person who wasn't performing that well and now performing better. And I started to analyze and try to think of what is the difference. And some of the few thoughts that I had was the difference might be the environment, because the curriculum is the same. I would say teachers are all qualified the same way, but the environment was built differently. It got me question myself a couple of questions. How many students are not studying to their fullest potential? And after that, I started thinking of what could be the mitigation, what could be the solution. And I thought of this platform to be the link, to be a place where a student is going to be able to collaborate, to engage, to exchange with students from across the country, to know what's happening there. You're struggling with this question, and student from this other school can help. I guess that's where the inspiration came from. And when I went to university, I started sharing this story with my fellow students. Even themselves, they either faced this same challenge or they have seen other people facing these challenges. So we were all on the same page that a very good environment can shape, you know, better performing students. So this kept me encouraged, and I decided to start off the project. I started by writing myself the chords, and I realized it could take me longer. I wasn't that of a good developer. And then I went on to my friend, and then he built me the prototype. And I took this prototype to the exhibition, the university exhibition. People from educational institutions, like including the Ministry of Education of Rwanda, found it interesting. And this was in 2019. They liked the project. They liked the idea, because it was more of an idea other than like a one or two pages of a prototype as well. When I was presenting, they fell in love with the project, and that's how the desire kept on burning inside me, and I decided to get a part-time job. And when I was at this work, that's when I could be able to afford to pay a developer, to pay some other small business expenses. Yeah, just to move it. And actually, that's what led to my dropout, because I got promoted from this job, and I looked at the money they were offering me, and I was like, okay, if I take this money for a few more months, I'll be able to push the project further. I dropped off, went on this job full time now, and the money that I was getting, I kept on investing into the project. So yeah, that's how it came up, and that's how we've started building it.
What have been some of your most pivotal milestones so far?
Quite many. Number one was when we got recognized by the Ministry of Education. They gave us the recommendation letter. It's like the green light. And this was after 2 years working on it, building it, and testing. Another time was when we won the couple of competitions. The big one was the Youth Connect Awards. This was about $20,000 of the grant. This was really, really huge. Yeah, it was one of the best days. Others, I would say, big partnerships. We worked with MTN Rwanda. This time we got zero rated by MTN. We partnered with other A-Tech players. The Academic Bridge, it's the leading school data management company. The recognition from different ministries, especially the Ministry of Education and the Ministry of Youth, recognizing my work and the impact that we are doing in the community. So these are one of the pivotal milestones so far. But when I think of what was the drive, the inspiration, what makes me so happy is the number of students whom we've managed to serve so far. Looking at numbers recently, they were about 45,000 students. So I'm really grateful and happy that we've managed to serve them, and we're looking forward to build muscle so that for the next 5 years we'll be able to serve at least the 50% of the students in the country.
Any challenges?
When we were starting, e-learning wasn't a thing. Like, very few seemed to understand why e-learning platforms. And if you look at, even from the government point of view, the effort wasn't that much. The mindset was the biggest challenge we faced. Why could we adopt that? Regardless of how much you can explain, most of these people who were in positions to take decisions were the people who have never experienced online learning. And they didn't understand why that is a better option out of all other number of options they could try. It was a big battle to fight. The next thing was the finance. Starting off, it was so difficult, you know. You try to pitch to people, it's so hard to earn their trust. No one is willing to work with you for free. Actually, this was one of the biggest challenges. Finance, money to run the business. You know, though I worked in as a supervisor and in a managerial position before, but being the CEO was a different game, was a whole different game. I didn't know how to be the CEO. I just knew how to be the supervisor, and this was in a built-up company. When I resigned from this job, it was super, super different. I was doing good in a company that has all other levels stable. The finance was there. Other departments were really, really operating. And this time around, SmartClass had no other departments, had no experienced people, had no money, had no nothing. So it was also really, really hard. Starting from building a team, building a business, building strategies. I thought I knew much about them, but I realized I was doing that in a company that was about 10 years old, if not more. So this also was one of the biggest challenges. Of course, I learned so many things by making mistakes, by doing.
EduTech gets such a small share of venture capital coming into Africa. How can the sector better position itself to secure funding and even make a bigger impact?
Yeah, this is true. EduTech companies still face challenges concerning a small share of venture capital coming into Africa. I believe this is mostly because of the traditional belief that education is a social good. So some of the parents don't even find it reasonable to pay extra money for education, because it's like government is covering everything regarding the education, or education is free. Education has a lot of potential to grow and make even more profits. If you look at the possibility to make money, it's also huge. Actually, imagine getting to know that every single person will once consume, in bracket, the so-called education in their lifetime. Sometime in their lifetime. This is an interesting part, and I believe there is still hope for a sector to better position itself and secure more funding. Like, the challenges happen at the bottom when you haven't figured out your business model. But as soon as you figure the business model, which can take time, like for me, it took me about 3 years. But as soon as you get this business model, then you see that the numbers start to be positive and promising, that you can even make more money, and you start to be seen relevant to the investors, especially the VCs. But again, I think government, together with parents, has to communicate, has to understand that to have a quality education, there is a need of private sector effort as well. Does this mean the country has to build libraries in each and every school? How much is this going to cost, and how much time is this going to take? So by encouraging innovation, especially in using technology, this can fasten how many people can access quality of education in a short period of time. Not only that, there is a need of more innovations in how people learn and how people approach learning. I think this has been changing recently, and it's a good thing, and people should be incentivized to keep innovating how people learn. And I see this as an opportunity for investors to make more bets as well as more profits.
Are there any changes you would like to see in your industry?
One of the changes that I would love to see is the mindset. And this can't be achieved until government and its partners also work together to push or encourage this shift in mindset. Parents could also be taken as a focal point in their child's education. I believe they will feel more responsible, and they will be one of the sponsors of these initiatives. I would wish that many investors could take bets on education technology innovations. And lastly, the collaborations and partnership with government institution and other giant institution. I'm really grateful that MTN Rwanda has worked with us. It's so rare to find giant companies willing to work with startup companies, especially in education space.
Is there an expansion plan for Smart Class?
We already have started conversations with other companies in East Africa to see how we can partner up and be able to work in this other geographical locations, studying in East Africa. And the conversations are promising, and we believe by the next year, we might be able to start the operations in one of the East African countries. But again, we project the next 10 years to be our time to go beyond the East African market, because our approach can be replicated in most of African countries. And our whole focus is mostly Africa as the continent.
That was Abdulrahman Niyoninzeye from Smart Class Rwanda. And a quick look at the markets. The market sandwich is powered by the Development Bank of Rwanda. We empower you. Cocoa futures dropped sharply to around $7,300 per pound on some long liquidation pressure after a recent rally that sent prices to a new record peak of $8,034 per pound on March 13th. Meanwhile, concerns persisted over shrinking West African supplies. Traders said the top exporter Côte d'Ivoire and number two producer Ghana are in the midst of their worst harvest in years, with the Ivorian arrivals estimated to be down more than 28% on last season. Latest data shows farmers in Côte d'Ivoire shipped 1.2 million metric tons of cocoa to ports from October 1st to March 10th, down 29% from the same time last year. Additionally, there were reports that some cocoa plants in Ivory Coast and Ghana have stopped or cut processing because they cannot afford to buy the beans. And a quick trip around Africa. Mining production in South Africa dropped by 3.3% from a year ago in January 2023, following a downwardly revised 0.2% increase in the prior month against market forecasts of a 0.2% rise. It marks the first decline in mining activity and the steepest since July last year, after three consecutive months of advances. South Africa's mining sector has been struggling with local challenges of currency fluctuations, high inflation, power blackouts, and logistical problems in exporting minerals because of the deteriorating road, rail, and port infrastructure. The largest negative contributors were manganese ore, gold, and diamonds. On a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, mining production fell by 0.8% in January after an upwardly revised 4.6% slump in December. Seasonally adjusted mining production increased by 0.1% in the 3 months ended January 2024 compared with the previous 3 months. The annual inflation rate in Ethiopia eased slightly to 28.2% in February of 2024, down from a 7-month low of 29.4% in the prior month. Prices decelerated a bit for food and non-food products. On a monthly basis, consumer prices rose by 1% in February after a 1.8% increase in the previous month. Thank you for always waking up with us. Good Morning Africa is a product of the K Financial. If you have suggestions or you just want to check out more stories, visit the website. That's thekfinancial.com. And don't forget to subscribe. You can also find us on all social media platforms at the K Financial. And you can find me at With the Dome.